Welcome back to Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallward. This is my co-host as she collects herself, Kara Kittrick.
Hi.
Kara, you got any news from the Wasteland?
Yes, I do. So, the United Arab Emirates, in the face of increasing desertification and the dwindling habitability of their country, is turning to drone-based cloud seeding to slightly improve rainfall. Other countries, including China, South Korea, Thailand, Indonesia, and multiple U.S. states, have been using these techniques for years to try to make it rain more, or in some cases, like Indonesia, less. Average temperatures in Dubai regularly surpass 115 degrees, but it only rains 4 inches per year. The effectiveness of cloud seeding technologies in general has been hotly debated in the scientific community, even as they become more sophisticated. With inflation on the rise, companies have been sneakily reducing the size of many of their products, from cereal boxes to toilet paper, while maintaining the same price. Studies have shown that most consumers don't tend to notice if the size of their products shrink slightly, and therefore their buying habits do not adjust as much as they would to a corresponding change in price. And finally, the San Francisco Chronicle recently reported on a story about a young man who made a custom AI using a free website called Project December, powered by GPT-3 technology, using text samples from his deceased ex-fiancée. The resulting computer program typed and acted in a way that was strikingly similar to the original person and was generally cogent and able to react appropriately to emotions. This conversation apparently helped this individual find the closure that he'd been seeking, even as the implications of tech that can accurately impersonate individuals remains unclear and worrying. Back to you, Chauncey.
So, you know, using these drones, apparently this has been going on for a while, you know. Why do you think it's just hitting the news now? I mean, I know there's probably been snippets, but it kind of hit in a big way these past couple of days.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's probably, well, for one thing, there were some just videos that came out recently of, like, cloud-seeded thunderstorms, basically. And also the technology has changed a little bit. Like, they've been doing more sort of traditional methods of cloud seeding involving, I want to say, silver nitrates, just sort of injected into the air, which we do, which lots of people do, farmers do it, all kinds of things. And it's of, you know, pretty marginal effectiveness. But so they kind of moved away from that to something that's much more sophisticated and really sort of very Dubai-centric, because the problem with rainfall in Dubai is that they get lots of, well, they don't get a lot of rain, but the rain they do get, the droplets that are smaller, it's so hot they tend to evaporate before they even hit the ground. Uh-huh. So what they do is they use drones that emit this electricity to sort of like statically condense the rain so that the rain
makes
the droplets are larger, basically. It's not more rain, it's just the droplets are larger, and that means they reach the ground, and they actually get into the water table, and therefore the water is usable, instead of just turning back to vapor and, you know, continuing on its merry way throughout the jet stream like it normally does.
So, you know, throughout history, I was watching some history show about trade routes and fishing on rivers, and that there were straight up wars because the fishermen would recreate the river in a way to catch the fish and then use those fish in the local economy. But the way they dammed the rivers to do it would cause a problem for the, you know, merchant flow. And I can't help. So I was talking to my wife. This is where I'm going with this. I wonder how long it'll be until we see some sort of wars based on climate, you know, because couldn't it be argued that as this rain falls there, it's evaporated back up, then it moves on and falls someplace else, but now it's not going to.
Yeah, so I have two answers to that. In terms of wars based on geoengineering, I don't know, that's not really clear because it's the perspective is like, it's unclear how much this actually does, right? And it's certainly like, pretty meager in the face of, like, the threats of climate change. Sure. In terms of wars fought over unintentional geoengineering, i.e. climate change, that's been happening for a while. The Syrian civil war, largely fought because of drought. Which, I mean, obviously there were other causes.
Well, there's always come other on causes. Now. I'm talking about wars between countries that matter. You know.
Yeah, well, millions of refugees.
Coming down on the Syrians. I'm not coming down on the Syrians, but the Syrian war doesn't necessarily have the global implications that a war between China, US, Russia, you know, these mad grabs for, you know, I mean, what if
maybe not, but
what if millions of people said all of the United States thinks like California about the climate?
Sure.
And China does not. And we say, we're doing everything we can, China won't stop. You know, it's like, I'm looking at it like that. Yeah.
If we go to war with China, it'll be over real quickly. So.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's not going to be a long, drawn-out thing if two superpowers go to war. It's just going to be everyone in the world dies. Except for, you know, like, a couple people, and they have to pick up the pieces.
Well, a lot of people seem to be looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, still on this topic, sticking with drones, not necessarily climate change, did you watch the opening ceremonies of the Olympics?
I did not.
They had a wild thing above the opening ceremonies where they had 1,800 drones making a perfect sphere of the globe, and they were just flying in such intense unison that it was really quite amazing to look at. And then on the way back from Tennessee, Jake and I both on the airplane watched like Olympus Has Fallen or whatever the third movie is in that series, and there were like these drone swarms. With like, and I thought that was really cool, and I figured we must have them. And then after watching the Olympics, I'm all, oh yeah, we got them.
Yeah. You know what's funny about this whole thing with like cloud seeding is like in the long term, the costs of doing this are of course astronomical. Also drones, the energy costs are huge. So like, in terms of not making the world hotter and making the problem even worse, it's probably not efficient, right? It's like doing this is purely a short-term fix. It's just going to make it worse eventually.
Yeah, is it windy there? Couldn't they do it with balloons or some sort of gas, you know, kind of cut on a lot of that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Dubai's thinking too much about renewable geoengineering techniques.
That's true.
Which, you know, it would be nice if they were, but Dubai is also, it's Dubai. Like, they're more into excess.
Right. You know, the use of energy has me thinking about, I'm getting very, I listen to a lot of conservative talk radio and.
Sure.
And I think we talked about this a little. I was listening to a whole show about how electric cars cause more damage to the environment than anything else, but it was coming from a radio show that didn't necessarily believe that we were changing the environment. So right. I found it incredibly frustrating that they were just,
there's no way that's true. That's wrong.
Well, they were just throwing arguments. It was more like they were arming their listeners to fight with other people in society more so than they were talking about the news or spreading the news. The entire show felt like they were arming their listeners.
Yeah,
and I wonder how often that goes on the left also, because, you know, I just don't think I'm as apt to see it.
Well, yeah, I think on things that are truly the left a lot, but I think, I don't know, I think a lot of times people think of like CNN as the left, and it's not. CNN is just milquetoast and boring, and yeah, they have, I would say they would have a liberal bias, but they also bend over backwards to like try to be neutral at all times. Whereas something like Fox News is like, hey, we're here, we're conservatives, screw you.
Summer takes flight at Turtle Bay's Wings of Summer Butterfly Exhibit, open June 19th through August 15th. Experience hundreds of butterflies in a tranquil and enclosed garden. Access is free for Turtle Bay members and included with park admission. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Reading Electric Utility cares about the whole community, and we offer an income-qualified residential energy discount program that can save you up to $400 a year on your energy bill. And once per year, CARES bill credit up to $300. To find out if your income qualifies you for a residential discount program and CARES program, call 339-7200. That number again is 339-7200.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR. Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody!
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Dinorama presents Bruise by the Bridge at Turtle Bay Exploration Park on Friday, August 13th. Join us at the Sundial Bridge for this 21 and over event featuring craft beers, live music, tasty food, and more. Get your tickets today at the Turtle Bay Museum or online at turtlebay.org.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/radiowasteland.
Long time. I want to say they were childhood friends. It was like 10 years, and then like 8 years later, he created this virtual program.
Yeah, I don't know. As a person who five of my family members died by the time I was 17, including my mother, I don't know if this is really the healthiest way to go about it. Now, people say, oh, it helped them. It helped them move past. Yeah, sure. I mean, it helped you move past, like as a ambulatory person, I could walk to the grocery store. A motorized wheelchair would help me get there, but would it really help me? Do you get what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah. You think it might be a crutch, right?
Yes. I don't think that coming up with unnatural ways to deal with natural things is probably the best bet. Now, don't get me wrong. The argument can be made for medicine and so on and so forth and stuff like that. But I think we're going down the wrong path there. You know, I would tell the audience that, you know, the thing that helped me learn to live with people passing is loving that person and knowing that I get to experience the things that they no longer do. And it's now my job to carry that experience for them. You know, I have a responsibility now. My responsibility is to remember my family members, is to notice the red of the flowers that they no longer get to see. Sure. You know, these little things. I think it's like breaking a bone and then setting it and letting it heal without any sort of, I don't know. I think this is probably going to come back to bite us.
Well, that is almost exactly what the AI told this dude. Was like,
oh, really?
Hey, I'm dead. I've been dead for a while. You need to go and live your life. Stop telling me how much you miss me. I know. Mm. But, and other people have repeated this, and, you know, the experiences have been different, but it's deeply dystopian, isn't it?
It
like,
is.
This whole thing, and, yeah, so this is, like, a nice application of this tech, and I think it's, the dystopian part for me is just reading this, like, feel-good story about how this AI helped someone, and, like, the whole time you're thinking, so we have AI that all you need to do is give it a text sample, and then it can just be that person online, and someone won't notice.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's, that's huge and terrifying, you know, and I'm vaguely, GPT-3 has been out for a while. It's not something that anyone can just use. It's because the processing power required is so huge. You know, there's a waiting list and you need to pay and stuff. Actually, I'm in this collaborative art project. I know a friend who managed to, through one of their friends, get some time on GPT-3 to make, like, these AI-generated tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were wild. Some of them were just, like, amazingly creative. So this is an incredibly powerful technology. And, you know, the applications for making fake news, for making fake tweets from people, well, that's already pretty easy by hand. But, you know, for making, like, fake chat conversations.
Right.
Like.
None of this sounds good.
No, yeah. And like, I'm sure you can use it for some good stuff, too. But this is, like, a deceptive technology. Like, it's that is its very nature. It's a sort of magic trick where it's not, the AI isn't thinking, it's just doing statistical analysis on, like, what should be said, and then it spits that out, right? So, it is by its nature something that is designed to fool people, and turns out that has lots of implications for fooling people, which is not really what people need right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that people need to, everything is politicized. Everything is politicized, but I think people need to be educated. And I don't mean that you need to be educated on social agendas and stuff like that. I mean, I think people need to not be stupid. I mean, let's pretend I am smarter than your average bear. Personally, I kind of believe that one man can do, another can do, for the most part.
Sure. Yeah, same.
But let's pretend that I'm smarter than the average bear. I'm no more smarter than the average person than the average person is taller than the average person. Sure, there are some really tall people, and there are some really smart people. But there aren't a lot of them. Most of us are capable of having the understanding of the world that the rest of us are. And somehow we put these entire blanket terms into these political boxes. And so now we put education, learning stuff. We've put actually learning stuff into a political box. Oh, you learn stuff? You know, it's like, If learning stuff leads to being brainwashed, we are in a very dangerous situation.
I mean, okay, I'm gonna, I guess, play devil's advocate for a moment.
Do it.
But I feel like most people who are like, higher education is brainwashing our kids, don't have a problem with, like, learning stuff. It's just what their idea of learning stuff is, you know, reading Breitbart and watching insane videos on YouTube and talk radio and stuff. Like, it's kind of the same it's kind of the same argument on both sides, right? Our source is good and your source is bad. Now, like, who's right? I mean, I think the answer to that is obvious, but obviously not everyone agrees.
Yeah, but there is a whole lot of crap in there that we can be pushing together. There is a mountain of knowledge that we all agree is accurate. And when you come along...
I don't know.
The Earth is round. Granted, there's a few flat earthers.
we've had people on our show who don't believe that.
Most people are going to agree that we should probably teach that the Earth is round in school.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and I think that when you demonize terminology, especially with people who... So you got this group that you've been making less and less intelligent. You've been creating the Morlocks. The Eloi have been creating the Morlocks.
Mm-hmm.
The Morlocks' vocabulary goes down, down, down. Every time a vocabulary goes down, it means that more concepts are shoved into one box. Am I quick? Am I fast? Am I speedy? Do those mean different things? Yeah, they all have different implications, but if I only know one, they're all one. And so when you shove people down into this smaller box and then you demonize the term education, all these people in this box are going to demonize everything that has to do with education.
Okay, I mean, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I don't think... there's anyone who, like, yeah, I'm dumb and I love that. Like, I think people just have a different idea of what the facts are. People are just living in a different reality and have a different idea about what it means to be educated. I've had people, like, anti-vaxxers yell at me, like, you need to be educated on this topic. And it's like, no, you need to be educated. Because my facts come from real sources and your facts come from insane snake oil salesmen. Like, but... essentially, our arguments are the same. We're saying the same thing to each other, and it's all you can do is determine who's right and who's wrong. There's no way around it.
We got to call the herd.
I feel like that's your answer to everything. It's a little worrying. Someone get weapons away from this guy.
Well, here's my side.
Are you going to become a supervillain, Chauncey?
I wish.
Because I support that. You have the look.
I can't afford it. I have a cat now, too. I have a cat.
You have a cat? Oh, my God. You can totally do the cat on the lap, stroking the cat, the whole thing.
No, it is for you to die, Kara.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's my sci-fi answer to this. And I don't know if anybody's going to like it because it has to do with spending a lot of money and giving people a lot of education. If we've decided that 18 is adulthood, I feel that in every town across this country, we need to build learning institutions where any person up to the age of 18 can go there 24 hours a day and have access to teachers and learning about any topic that they want.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, and I would love that.
And
but you know what people are saying is, the government's going to brainwash you.
Into what?
Yeah, well... Don't vote them in again.
Don't vote them in again.
You and I agree on this, I think, but we'll just look at the angry comments in the KCNR chat room and see what the other side is saying.
We're all gonna laugh about this in 20 years when we come out of our holes of the ground after the sun went down and eat a dog we found.
Yeah.
All right, you're listening to Radio Wasteland. You want to know more about Bigfoot? Well, then stick around.
It's the Ramsey Show, where we talk about your life and your money. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? All have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Now that our healthcare heroes have helped us cross to the other side of COVID, I'd like to take this time to thank all of our heroes who have kept everything flowing smoothly. From the wonderful teachers at the Reading Rancheria Head Start to the helpful crew at the Wind River Mini Mart, the friendly staff at the Reading Hilton Garden Inn, and the amazing people who make everything at Wind River Resort and Casino and the Reading Rancheria run so smoothly. Thank you. Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Skeet. Join me and my friends every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. with the California Adventure District radio show, where we talk about all the amazing adventures to be had in our area, from climbing Mount Shasta, hiking the trails, kayaking, overlanding, and camping with Bigfoot. We have it all. California Adventure District. Less people, more adventure. Listen Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com. Don't miss This Morning with Gordon Deal, followed by the Sue McClain News Hour, Free Fire Radio, and Armstrong and Getty on KCNR.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest tonight is Seth Breedlove, and our topic for tonight is On the Trail of Bigfoot, the Journey.
Because when you make and try this, you're going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't know about this before.
I noticed that you have made quite a few documentaries about mysterious critters, which I was really shocked, you know, and a lot of them, I'm just, oh man, I haven't heard of these movies and this looks like a bunch of great stuff. So I guess the question on the Bigfoot front would be, why did it take you so long to get to the main guy? You know, a lot of these are like lesser known characters in the world of cryptids, and Bigfoot's the big guy. Did you put it off on purpose, or was it just what was presented to you?
I mean, we've been covering Bigfoot to some extent since the first movie, because Minerva Monster is kind of a Bigfoot case. But yeah, as far as like taking a look at the greater phenomenon, it took me a while to get to that point because I didn't know how to approach it in a way that hadn't been done a billion times.
Yeah.
And it turned out like most of the stuff, like just the most straightforward kind of approach, hadn't been done. And so I've watched probably every Bigfoot documentary there is. And I hadn't seen one that really broke down the entire history of the phenomenon in a way that was I guess, comparable to something like a PBS documentary, like Ken Burns. Like, if this was my Ken Burns approach to Bigfoot. So the first series, On the Trail of Bigfoot, was really my stab at just telling the history of the subject and a little bit about, like, where it stands today. And then On the Trail of Bigfoot, the journey kind of picks up where that series left off and puts it in a very personal context, I guess, since it's directly about my interaction with the subject.
So, you know, was your interest in making these movies based in a belief or a curiosity? Like, did you go into these things believing that they existed, or just wanting to know more?
No, I think first and foremost, I'm a storyteller, and so I'm traditionally looking for stories that appeal to me, and stories that inspire some sort of, idea about how I can relay these stories to an audience that might never have heard them before. And so, I don't come at anything as a believer or a skeptic or a whatever. I just, I'm pretty much interested in relaying a story that I find fascinating. And I think that's one of the things that sets STM apart from a lot of, Discovery Channel shows or whatever you want to talk about. Pretty much all the mainstream paranormal content is sort of geared around, swaying people to belief or non-belief. And I'm not really interested in swaying people one way or the other. I just want to tell a story. The draw for me is it revolves around, I guess, my interest in just telling stories that involve these subjects that so many people find fascinating. But I mean, I'm not in the camp that believes you have to consider cryptids or UFOs or whatever real or not real to enjoy the stories. The entire series Small Town Monsters was kind of built around the idea that these stories are part of the history of the areas where they take place, and that they inform the culture of those communities. And that was what originally interested me in making these movies, was to, I guess, explore how, something like a regional Bigfoot case could impact the culture of a community. And so that's the draw for me, much more than, like, is Bigfoot real or not real? I mean, personally, I believe Bigfoot's real, but I could care less if my audience does.
Right. Yeah, Kara and I tend to be coming from the healthy skeptic level, pulled into this stuff just because it's
cool. Who are you calling healthy?
Yeah, it's just cool, mm-hmm. to hear about,
Yeah, that's what.
But I mean, I'm open to the possibility, but Bigfoot is one of those ones that... there's a lot of arguments both ways, half the people would say there's no way that it could exist out there and we would have found it. And the other half say it could easily exist out there and we'd never find it, in doing these things, when you get out to the wilderness, do you find that the magnitude is somewhat overwhelming?
You mean like the magnitude of where we are, or
yeah,
I mean, for sure. I think that's the thing that stands out, and being out where you are, you're well aware of this, but I think the magnitude of the forest itself, wilderness, whatever you want to call it, there's still plenty of, isolated areas around the United States. And I think that was like the biggest takeaway from something like On the Trail of Bigfoot, the Journey, was that even in New York State, which we connect so often with New York City or Albany or some of those bigger, cities, you've got this massive forested area in upstate New York that has 6 million acres of coverage, and where something could easily stay hidden if it wanted to. And that isn't to say that alone is an argument for the existence of Bigfoot.
Sure.
But certainly when we're out there, I mean, it is kind of eye opening, to discover how much, you know, how much land there is where there aren't people roaming all over the place or crawling on top of each other.
I'm curious, you mentioned mentioned a second ago you were interested in sort of the way that a cryptid case or a Bigfoot case sort of impacts the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about that. I don't know I can't think of a whole lot of examples, but also don't know the topic super well. One thing I think of is like Point Pleasant and Mothman, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really big there. They have the whole festival and everything. But what's like some examples of that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it can impact a community in a lot of different ways and beyond. Point Pleasant's probably the best example, honestly, because you've got this city that actually embraced the story. Mm-hmm. and they knew how to turn it into tourism, right? Like they knew how to turn it into a tourism boon. They embraced it to a level that most small towns do not. But what, you know, beyond that, what fascinates me is when towns don't do that. Like when towns want nothing to do with their local monster. Minerva Monster, the first movie we made, you know, it took a look at a town that pretty much didn't want anything to do with the Minerva Monster, and it had done everything they could for the last 40 some years to just write it off and move on from it. And still that creature, that character, and that case is probably what that town is best known for.
Put the cookie down now.
There's so many different ways that a regional monster case and regional folklore can impact the local community. And if the community knows what's good for it in the current state of the world, they will hopefully embrace those stories because, you know, they are a big draw for a lot of people. I mean, most of the communities we go to are more well known for their local legend than they are anything else. So you've got Adams, Tennessee, where the Bell Witch was. I mean, people know Adams because of the Bell Witch. You know, Elkhorn, Wisconsin, where the Beast of Bray Road, it's the same story. You know, I mean, people don't know Minerva because they have a giant dairy cow in the middle of the center of town. It's that, you know, they had a cool Bigfoot story connected with it back in the 70s. So there's a lot of different ways those communities can be affected, and hopefully can use that to their advantage.
You know, Kara and I are from a town. We've both moved away since we started Radio Wasteland, but we started it in the town of Redding, California. And it turns out that like 30 years ago, Redding was offered a university, and they turned it down. And, you know, we look at it now and we go like, oh, why would you do this? I mean, the amount of income that would have been brought to the area from a university is just insane. You know, why turn it down? And a lot of it is this sort of like refusal to change. And I think a lot of smaller areas are scared of the big change. You know, they're not necessarily scared of being the people with the Bigfoot story. They're scared of the people that are going to come, I think.
Yeah, I think I see that in small towns, regardless of whether it's about the paranormal or not. Anyone from outside can be a reason to bristle for some people, especially older generations. The entire town of Louisiana, Missouri, where the Momo case was took place. I mean, those people to this day want nothing to do with that story. But when you sort of inquire about why, it has more to do with the fact that they don't want outsiders coming into their town.
Oh, that's interesting.
Than it does with the fact that they don't want to be associated with a Bigfoot story. It's more about.
So it's not that, oh, kooky paranormal thing. We don't want that. They just, you know, don't look at us. We don't
for that particular town, for that particular town, for sure. But it's different for, I mean, I have been in communities where it seemed like the bulk of people didn't want anything to do with it because they don't want to be the Bigfoot town or they don't want to be the ghost hunting town, things like that.
Right.
Have you opened your electric bill yet? Got sticker shock? Get rid of super high electric bills with solar from Powerhouse Solar, a SunPower Elite dealer. With great solar products from SunPower and financing available, you can't go wrong. Plus, there's still a 26% tax credit still available. Learn more when you visit powerhousesolar.com.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today's review is Michelef Grande Bold, a classic Maduro stick with a rich, dark, oily Ecuadorian broadleaf wrapper surrounding Nicaragua's best tobacco. Full-bodied and full flavor, your palate will delight with hints of dark chocolate, nuts, and cedar. Come down to the best cigar shop around, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Have you opened your electric bill yet? Got sticker shock? Get rid of super high electric bills with solar from Powerhouse Solar, a SunPower Elite dealer. With great solar products from SunPower and financing available, you can't go wrong. Plus, there's still a 26% tax credit still available. Learn more when you visit powerhousesolar.com.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
Just from, like, you know, 21st century, late 20th century accounts, we have reports going all the way back to the 1800s of creatures that seem to at least bear similarities to what we consider Bigfoot today. And this thing's been behaving the same way, you know, since the 1800s. So either it's a really cool coordinated hoax or there's something out in the woods that behaves in a very specific way.
Right. Yeah. It would almost be like stranger and more fantastic if there was like a secret society of Bigfoot hoaxsters that have been around for 250 years or something.
Yeah. There's a quote by Grover Krantz that I don't know how it goes exactly, but he says something to the effect of like I can't remember what the quote is because it was almost exactly what you just said. Like the idea of a hoax is so absurd that even though it seems more likely, it just doesn't line up. Like it doesn't work out. There can't be hundreds, if not thousands of people coordinating this hoax over, you know, a couple hundred years. At the same time, why don't we have a body? Why don't we have photographic evidence? All that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Intergalactic gold hustler. That's why.
Brown, go work on Starbase 80.
Damn, Starbase 80?
And I think about it a lot when driving. Because if you think about the amount of people that are on the road and driving and doing what I'm doing, which is listening, futzing with the radio or whatever, you'd think that there would just be tons upon tons of wrecks, like statistically way more than we have. But, you know, humans are a little more predictable. You know, to go out of your way to create a hoax, you're right. It does end up being something that is really kind of rare that people actually do. And when we find them, we're always kind of like, wasn't there one not too long ago of people like taking a deer in a Bigfoot costume and shoving it in a freezer?
Yeah, the Georgia freezer hoax. Actually, Steve Calls, who's in the Journey movie, he's one of the guys that busted that hoax attempts. But yeah, the Georgia freezer hoax, which would have been around like 2001, 2002, I want to say. Maybe a little later in the 2000s. But
grade, so relatively new.
Yeah, you remember that. These two guys, yeah, basically stuffed a Bigfoot costume with a bunch of meat and then put it in a freezer and claimed it was a Bigfoot and tried to, I mean, they successfully gained a lot of attention. It's interesting. Yeah. I don't feel like we get those same like large scale hoaxes that we used to have as much anymore. I don't know if people just have better stuff to do with their time or if they're, you know, there's so much awful crap happening in the world on a daily basis that they don't, you know, they don't want to go out in a suit and get shot or whatever. But, yeah, it seems like in the last couple, like maybe last decade, there's just less of that kind of hoaxing, like mainstream kind of hoaxing that gets a lot of attention.
That's such a bizarre way to do it because like, if anyone looks at it, they're going to be like, how interesting that, you know, Bigfoot has like hair that's made out of polyester fibers and the body is just full of cold cuts, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's not what I would have expected scientifically.
Salami falling out of the arm.
Exactly. Yeah. Like,
totally. Bigfoot turns out eats a ton of nitrates.
I mean, yeah.
Okay. So as you can tell, I'm a multitude of nerds. I got a pretty nerdy question. I'm not sure who's going to care about the answer, but I want to know. You said that when you set out, you plan all this ahead. You know, how does that work? You say you're cold calling people. Obviously, there's some research that goes on. So you get a name and you start with that name and then you start asking them who they can talk to, who you can talk to, and build it out from one story. And it's all on the phone first before you get there.
So in the last two, three years now, we have a researcher at STM, Heather, and she helps me with a lot of that kind of stuff. But, that is a big part of what we do. I mean, we basically will come up with like, what is the topic of the movie? And then I start thinking creatively about how the movie is going to go, what kind of people we're looking for. And then I'll kind of talk to her about that. And then she starts tracking those people down through whatever nefarious means she's using to find these people. I know when I was doing it, I did it all the ways you would expect a creep to do it, which is you'd find them on Facebook talking about stuff and then you would reach out to them that way, or you would look up, you know, like you'll read names. If people are talked about in sort of any kind of news media, you'll find their name that way. And then you just look them up and contact them. The other thing I think that we have a lot is like a lot of people contact us ahead of time and they will say, I have a story, you know, like if you're ever doing a story here, get in touch with me. Then you get in touch with them. And then I guess the other way is that over the years, I've been doing this now for about 6 years. So you build relationships with people. And then, I mean, I meet probably thousands of people each year. And in that time, you meet a lot of people who claim to have experiences who want to talk. You know, and obviously there's a whole other set of parameters that comes with vetting these people and trying to figure out who's telling you the truth and who isn't. But, I mean, that's a part of this job that can't really be understated, is just the sheer amount of time and effort that goes into finding the people that you're going to interview. Because at the end of the day, your typical paranormal TV show has a very different end game in mind than Small Town Monsters does. Like, our end game is really to tell a great story, to document the history of these cases, and to put it out as a movie that people will enjoy. And I think most TV shows just, you know, what's the scariest thing we can make this person say?
Sensationalism.
Yeah. What's the scariest thing we can get this person to say so we can make a really insane recreation to put in our TV show?
Yeah, so the shows always make it seem like this is the show that's going to show us the indisputable evidence. You know, this is going to be a great sales pitch for the movie. Is there any indisputable evidence in there?
No. No, yeah. I mean, I think it's a movie about something a lot bigger than that. And I think we've got movies with evidence. The first On the Trail of Bigfoot has video of, you know, eyeshine in the woods. We've got some really fascinating sounds and that kind of stuff. At the end of the day, that stuff might open someone's mind to this stuff a little bit, but anymore, anything can be faked and hoaxed. And I think people watch this stuff knowing that. So no matter what you show them or what kind of sounds you give them to listen to, they kind of have they're predisposed to think one way or the other. And so this was a movie about, you know, things that are not typically associated with the Bigfoot subject, like the healing power of nature and getting out and experiencing, you know, the world around you and the natural world around you. And, you know, the camaraderie that grows between people that get into these subjects that most people can consider weird. There's a lot more going on with the movie than just can we convince people Bigfoot's real, because I'm not fully convinced Bigfoot's real. Right. So I'm hoping
people's story, I assume.
Right, right. And if the story or if the filmmaking experience, if something happens during that filmmaking to convince me that Bigfoot's real, then hopefully the audience gets to go along on that part of the journey as well. But that did not take place on this shoot. And I still think there's plenty in the movie to make people stop and question, you know, the possibility that maybe these things are out there. You've got multiple eyewitness stories in the movie. You've got, you know, a couple interesting sounds, things like that. But I think I've always felt like eyewitness stories are the most compelling evidence for the existence of Bigfoot anyway, because evidence can be hoaxed. And when you're watching, you know, 15 different people give their story and that you can hear them tell it in their own way, I think there's something much more believable about that.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.